news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock on our Tuesday morning, and that means Quinn Hillier time from the Washington Examiner and also QuinnHillier.com. Quinn, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
So we've got, it is, as it turns out, we had three elections in Mobile, local city council elections that fell into runoffs because the races were close enough for that to happen. The winner did not get 50% of the vote in those districts. Happening today, so there are folks who are literally heading to the polls right now, Quinn.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, they got three interesting races, but one of them, of course, is sort of unprecedented, at least down here. I mean, it's happened at other places across the country. But obviously, unfortunately, we have LaVon Manzi on the ballot, even though LaVon passed away a couple of weeks ago. And he is running against William Carroll, who held the seat for two terms before. And, of course, as everybody well knows by now, Manzi's name stays on the ballot. If you vote for him, and he wins, it causes a new election, an entirely new election, which would probably mean a primary and then maybe even a runoff. Here's the thing. One election would cost $134,000. That comes right out of the city coffers. Do you know how much good $134,000 could do if it was used for something other than an election? You can, you know, list all the outside groups like the botanical gardens, the civic organizations and stuff that get some city contracts. You can look at playgrounds that could get funded. You could look at extra police cars or something like that. And instead, the money would go for a brand new election. When you've got somebody on the ballot in William Carroll who has already proved in two terms that he can do the job competently and without scandal, to me, it makes no sense to make the citizens of District 2 go through another election at that cost when you've got a proven commodity that you can vote for instead.
Well, Quinn, let me ask you, because, you know, 47% of the people that turned out for the initial election voted for someone that was not William Carroll, LaVon Manzi. They didn't know that he was going to pass away before the runoff. So, you know, for the 47% that thought they were voting for one candidate, you're saying even if they don't like what William Carroll says he'll do for the city, that they should just, put up with it because it would cost $100,000?
Yeah, but there's a difference here in that they were voting for an incumbent they thought would serve, that it wasn't necessarily a reflection on William Carroll. It was not quite a majority voting in favor of keeping in place somebody who had worked really hard at the job.
Right. But okay. It was a reflection on William Carroll, though. He was in the race.
Well, he was in the race, but again, anytime you have an incumbent and the incumbent gets less than 50%, then that's showing that a majority didn't necessarily want him, number one. But number two, I mean, incumbents tend to get the votes. And it's not to say that it was LaVon Manzi, I mean, that it was 77% of the people voting against William Carroll. It was 47% of the people voting specifically for LaVon Manzi, who most people thought had done a good job. The point here is you're getting a great big unknown if you vote to have a new election. You are costing the city $134,000, and you are, in some cases, a lot of the people that I've heard talk about this say they want to cast a vote for LaVon Manzi to honor LaVon Manzi.
Right.
There are going to be plenty ways that LaVon Manzi is going to be honored. There are going to be things named after him all over the city. you don't have to honor him by causing a new election that's going to cost the city that much money.
So what's the outside interest here that's playing in the middle of this here they seem to be well financed, and what they're trying to do is they're promoting people do vote for Von Manzi, so in fact there is a special election. Exactly who is this group?
Well, the newspapers, both of them, have done a lot of reporting on this. There are some groups that have some Republican leanings, typically. There are other groups that have Democratic leanings. I think the biggest money group seems to have Republican leanings.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear who or what they have in mind. But I'm a fiscal conservative. I don't like money wasted. Neither should the residents of District 2. And let me say a good word about William Carroll. I was on the air with you guys a couple of weeks ago right after LaVon Manzi died. And I noted, I won't go through the whole story again, but I coached little eighth-grade basketball girls against William Carroll. He was the opposing coach.
Right.
And he, let's just say, he was a consummate gentleman and sportsman, and so were the girls that played for him. He impressed me a great deal. He's a proven commodity. He served two pretty good terms on the council. He might have ruffled some feathers, but he voted with he worked with integrity. He worked with competence, and he can hit the ground running.
Right, and I Quinn, I agree with you. Carroll, he seems like a good guy, and his interview with Jeff Poor yesterday, he came off really well. I don't necessarily agree with saying that the voter is wrong for whatever they decide to vote for, whether that's Manzi to honor him or whether they just want a special election because the people that they thought were in the race, and specifically LaVon Manzi, that he's not in the race anymore.
I'm not going to say the voters are wrong. I'm just saying, to me, it doesn't make any sense. $134,000 in a city budget is significant.
Right.
What I would say makes no sense is to cast a vote just in sympathy for Manzi. If you're casting a vote because you really want to see somebody else in the race, that's one thing. If you're casting a vote to honor LaVon Manzi, as I said, LaVon Manzi is going to be honored, and deservedly so, because he was a good guy. He's going to be honored in numerous ways. His name's going to be all over the place on, playgrounds or whatever. This is not the best way to do it.
Well, let's talk about, the annexation thing. And even if it is dirty politics, like some people are claiming, to have these mailers sent out to get people to vote for Manzi because you prefer that a candidate a little more apt to vote for annexation would be better in that district too. What's wrong with, voting against someone who you feel won't vote for annexation, what you want? If somebody feels...
Because LaVon Manzi voted against annexation. It was the single worst vote LaVon Manzi cast.
Right.
So it makes no sense to say, I'm going to vote for the late LaVon Manzi because I'm for annexation when Manzi was against it.
But didn't William it begin Carroll, to look like his mind had kind of changed, that they would vote for annexation before long?
You tell me. I mean, you've got vague rumors that he would have changed his mind, but you have his hard vote against it. And meanwhile, William Carroll, and you can go back and read all the public comments, has shown himself very open to annexation. He hasn't committed because he wants to see exactly what the tract of land is. He believes, I think he said, that some other areas should be annexed in addition to those that were proposed. But he has said he's wide open to expanding the city limits. He just wants to see what the details are. Now, that is not an anti-annexation stance.
Well,
that's an open mind, which last time I checked, an open mind is a pretty good thing.
So we're going to talk about the passing of Father Lucy. But before we get to that, after the break, I do want to get into one other district race. We'll do that. So a little more politics and then some of your recollections and memories of and the career and the life and times of Father Lucy as well up at Spring Hill College. Sound good?
Thanks. Appreciate it.
You got it. 16 minutes after 8 o'clock, FM Talk 106.5. Text line, feel free, 343-0106. Also, we'll open up the phone lines a little bit later on where you can call us at that very same number. It is 16 minutes after 8 o'clock. I'm Dan Brennan. There's Dalton Orwig. It's Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5 at 8:22. Another cloudy one, and where you are, maybe a wet one, maybe a rainy day. And there's certainly portions of Baldwin County don't need any more of that, but looks like you're going to get it today. Also, out there on, might be Moffett Road, a little bit further west, there's a road is washed out there that comes off of Moffett Road, so it's been troubling Mobile as well. Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, the Washington Examiner, and quickly, Quinn, also, if people want to pick up your work, your novels, they can do that as well.
Mad Jones Heretic is the first one. They're all called Mad Jones something or other, and they're at Amazon.com.
So one more district I wanted to get into is this District 1 race, the runoff Herman Thomas against Corey Penn. Corey Penn seems to have kind of a clean slate if you look at what his life has been to this point. He hasn't had a life in politics until now. Herman Thomas, maybe a little different story. I think everybody's familiar with his less than glorious past. It's also very curious, the surge of support from prominent Mobilians for Herman Thomas. What do you make of this race?
That surge of support is bizarre. And for the sheriff to support somebody who did the things Herman Thomas did, completely against his, or I guess I must say allegedly, although there's plenty of evidence, where he mistreated in a very sexual way several of the inmates that came before him, or the accused that came before him. He was disbarred. This is a guy who had no respect for the law, and for the sheriff to support him makes absolutely no sense. It's a black mark on the sheriff's name.
The people that voted for Herman Thomas and whoever votes for him today, you think it's more of a case of they know about his past and don't care, or they don't know about his past and are just looking forward? It's a tough question to answer, right?
I'm absolutely baffled. It makes absolutely no sense. And here's what also doesn't make sense. You brought up annexation in the last conversation. Mm-hmm. The sheriff is known as the number one proponent of annexation. He is endorsing Herman Thomas, the same guy endorsed by outgoing Councilman Fred Richardson, who was the person who more than any other was responsible for defeating annexation. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell me that Herman Thomas, that Fred Richardson would have endorsed somebody without making sure that he was against annexation? That makes no sense.
That is a head scratcher. Mm. No doubt about that.
Somebody knows something that's not being verbalized.
Well, you wonder if also the two had different reasons for endorsing Herman Thomas.
That's what it sounds like.
No, except that the sheriff specifically said that he thought that Herman Thomas would be for annexation. There's some funny business going on, and it will reflect very poorly on the city if somebody with Herman Thomas's past gets in office.
We'll move on from here. We'll have to talk about that next week.
And by the way, there's no way somebody lives in the city and does not know about Herman Thomas 10 years ago.
Yeah.
All right, Father Lucy, he was a big figure on the Hill for a long time.
Yeah, president of Spring Hill College. He was also head of, I forgot the name of, there was a Jesuit organization, national Jesuit organization, before he came down here. And then between his two stints as president of Spring Hill College, he was head of the National Association of Jesuit Colleges and Universities, overseeing 28 of them. But he came down to Mobile, and he took a struggling campus, and he completely built six new buildings, which looked so much better than some of the other ones. He renovated a lot of the others. He finished getting the athletic fields. And meanwhile, he was a man who would show up at cultural events all over town, made friends right, left, and center. Didn't matter what your politics were. He was a pastor to many, many people. He was a man of warmth and generosity. He was down here just in June for the funeral of Sonny Callahan, the former congressman. Looked fit and trim, but he died in his sleep at 88 last week. Yeah. And I just want to, you know, he did a lot for not just Spring Hill College, but for the whole Mobile community. And I want to say he is remembered very fondly.
Yeah, I did not realize that it was under his administration all those buildings went up. That campus is really transformed.
Oh, it was already a beautiful campus in terms of the grounds, just the topography and everything, but the buildings had really gotten run down, and he transformed the look of it and the feel of it and modernized it. He did a wonderful job, and again, he was such a warm and generous man and a man of deep, deep faith. And was just a joy to be around anytime you saw him. And again, we are all, as Mobilians, in his debt.
Yeah, certainly a beautiful campus out there, and I've lost many a golf ball out on that golf course. So
it wasn't Father Lucy's fault.
No, wasn't his fault.
It was, sure. And it was Quinn. You pointed out that he was. He was present a lot. He was somebody who did not just stay in the tower. He got out and he mingled with the people. I saw him at events for 25 years, probably.
Exactly. I mean, he was all over the place, and he cared enough. When Sonny Callahan died, Father Lucy had just retired last year up to Wisconsin, but Father Lucy, at age 88, flew home from Wisconsin to officiate at Sonny Callahan's funeral. He was very close to the former congressman, even though I do not think they shared the same politics. Mm-hmm. And again, he was a deservedly beloved man. And, he deserves to have not just on campus, but other places in the city. He deserves to have something named for him.
And Quinn, if people want to always keep an eye on what you're thinking, what you're writing, where can they do all that?
Well, you can go to quinnhillier.com, which is updated about once a week. You can subscribe for free, and your name will not go to any of these other sites. It's just for me. And then you can Google Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner and see most of my stuff daily.
Appreciate your time again this week, Quinn, and we'll talk to you in 1 week's time.
Thanks, guys.
Quinn Hillier, quinnhillier.com, and Washington Examiner, and always enjoy engaging with him on Tuesday mornings. Hey, tomorrow, Coffee with a Cop Day nationally. Yeah. And coming up here after the break, John Weishman is in. He's brought donuts.
I saw that.
We're down from a dozen to 10.
Already.
He brought coffee cups. So what do you think we're talking about when we get back here?
Coffee with a Cop?
That's
tomorrow?
Right.
Tomorrow? Okay. We'll talk with John here on the way. It's 8:30 with Dan and Dalton. FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor at the top of the hour on the Jeff Poor Show.
Thank you, Kane. 8:35 FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. Hey, pretty awesome news here. We're two Saturdays away from the Try the Gulf Triathlon on Dauphin Island. And Dan, actually, I said good news. It's bad news for you.
What's up?
Too late for you to enter now. We have our competitors.
What the?
You said you were defending champ, right? But looks like you won't be able to defend the crown.
This is garbage.
The rosters are full. Everyone who's racing, you want to see a good race?
Yeah.
What's the last part of the triathlon? Is that the run, or is it so you do bike, swim, and then run, right? If I just did the running portion of triathlon, then I would be competitive, I think, with the people who do the rest of the event. But if it was just me doing one part of the triathlon.
My triathlon would be stretching, long jump, and you finish it out with the hula hoop.
Oh, yeah.
That would be my triathlon.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And I would win that thing.
Well, the real athletes will be out on Dauphin Island in two Saturdays.
Okay.
The Try the Gulf Triathlon, you know, this is the sixth annual triathlon they've had down there on Dolphin Island. And it's been a couple years because of the, of course, pandemic, and then you had the storms. Try the Gulf, if you were unaware, it's the Mobile Bar Foundation's largest fundraiser. It's helped raise over $330,000 in local charity funding since they began the event back in 2016. It's presented by Tobias McCormick and Comer, a local law firm here in Mobile, and they do a great job of giving back to the community. If you want to find out more about Tobias McCormick and Comer, you can check them out online, tmclawyers.com. Also, for a free consultation with TMC, dial 251-432-5001. But a reminder, you know, you can't compete in the event, but I believe you can still go out and watch Try the Gulf Triathlon two Saturdays from now on Dolphin Island.
Very good. Special guest in studio is Community Research Officer with the Crime Prevention Unit of Mobile Police Department, John Weichman. A lot of you know John for years around here.
John, yeah.
And we applaud you, John. We don't always applaud guests, but you brought us up.
Dunkin' Donuts will get your attitude right.
That's right. Yeah. You know how to get the morning crew behind you here.
That's right.
Yeah. Dunkin' Donuts and some coffee cups, and this is all because of a great event that's coming up tomorrow. And this is a national event, right? Coffee with a Cop Day.
Yes, first Wednesday of October is recognized as the National Coffee with a Cop Day that has now been performed in over 1,000 cities across the country. And it's actually in 15 different countries internationally, utilizing five languages from French and Lithuanian to Spanish in USA. But basically, it started in 2012 in Hawthorne, California, when a police department was brainstorming about trying to get a better communications link going with the public. And as it turns out, Mobile held the first training session in Gulf Shores in 2013 in the country and brought in officers, law enforcement representatives from four states, and our own officer, Gary Owens, was the representative. Lieutenant Kay Taylor is over the crime prevention unit that supports this. And that's real simply what Coffee with a Cop is about. It's a neutral ground to give people an opportunity to communicate to officers, to thank them, to get questions answered. There's no agenda from the police department. There's no speeches. It is just accessibility and showing that we're really interested in listening to the public because they are who we are there to serve.
So how do we participate tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow is going to be great. We're going to have it down there at the government complex, 205 Government Street. So from 8 to 10, again, we'll set up our dog and pony show. We have everything from the Dunkin' Donuts that will be provided complimentary to coffee, which is a Hill & Brooks partnership right now, as Dunkin' Donuts is. From time to time, also Costco and Sam's and Pullman's Bakery have been great partners when we ask them. But we will have everything from coloring books for the children and grandchildren to complimentary, as I say, coffee and lemonade, since, you know, it's not all that that cold, and some people don't want to start their day going to work at 8 or 9 o'clock with a third cup of coffee.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're just going to be there to meet and greet, and just look forward to, you know, answering any questions that anybody may have, and let them know that, you know, the police department is no different than them.
Yeah.
You know, that we're all dealing with the same challenges, but the police department takes responsibility to really try and keep Mobile safe. And we got, you know, we got a great public safety group. You know, since I joined the department back in December of 17, you know, I'm part-time, that we've seen great progression through the leadership all the way. You know, Chief Barber's up there now, Chief of Staff, and Chief Batiste as the Director of Public Safety. We just had a great tenure with Interim Chief Hodge.
Yeah.
And really the first person that I really met when I came into the police circles was at that time Captain Paul Prine. He was captain or commander of the 3rd Precinct on St. Stephen's Road. And his engaging personality and the just a projection of nice to meet you, was sincere and so much and supportive, because at that time I was actually wanting to talk to his people. And so I know they were all good candidates in the finality.
Yeah.
But Captain Prine, now Chief Prine, will really represent the interests of the city of Mobile.
That's good to hear because, you know, assuming the city council votes that sure. appointment through. So you kind of mentioned it there. What do you think Mobile will get with the soon-to-be Chief Prine? A pretty straight shooter? He's going to let everybody know what's going on? Or what are you seeing in the future here?
That is his reputation and his persona. He's honest, transparent. He's not doesn't have any prejudices or biases. He does. You know, he's a policeman's policeman. You know, we got what's called general orders in the department. He expects those to be followed, I would believe. He does want to really get the community relationships to a new height, as we always do. But I think, you know, he's got some strategic plans, which I certainly don't know. But his strategic plans that he presented through the interview process, as I saw in that Sunday article in the newspaper, are what sort of, you know, separated him from the pack, but he's going to try to help our attrition rate. You know, the city council and under the mayor's and Chief Barber's leadership have really did a lot of catch up for our mm-hmm. officers. I mean, when I came on, they were getting $35,000 a year to go out there and, you know, and take a chance of mm-hmm. not coming home.
Right.
And soon, I understand, we're at $40,000 now, and we're going to get up to $42,000 to make us really competitive. You know, Coffee with the Cop is there to build that support of the public's knowledge of the police department, and we're not some strange, distant third party.
Right. We're talking with CRO with Mobile Police Department, John Weishman. Tomorrow, National Coffee with a Cop Day, an event coming up 205 Government Street at Government Plaza, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Get your coffee, get your Dunkin', get your lemonade if you're not a coffee person. You said this started back in 2012.
2011 in Hawthorne, California.
And then you fast forward and think about what has gone on in this nation since then. And while I don't think Mobile is a city like so many of these others where the relationship between the police force and the community is frayed, to say the least, in some of these cities like Minneapolis and out in California, how important is this in this day and age that, you know, that people get out there and meet the police officers in a different light than you would traditionally if they were showing up from a call where they're out, you know, actually on a call? It's you're talking about same people but different situations. How important it is to just kind of have that link in the community where people get to know the police as people.
Well, that's it. That's why we have a neutral location, because people are shy. They may have a lot on their mind, but still they're very timid about going into an area that has any type of definition. I mean, we've done this at public libraries. We've done it at Rouse's. We've done it on Spring Hill Avenue in front of the Federal Credit Union. And we've done it at Meat Boss. We keep circulating within the five precincts so that we make it easy for people to have access to us. And we try to find places where there's going to be normal traditional traffic and the hours that there will be good traffic. Well, at some point, do the Greers on St. Louis Street, because that's got such a great acceptance.
Yeah, it's
there.
It's got a great reputation in about a month, right?
Yeah. I mean, they've come out gangbusters. Yeah. And couldn't be happier, because tremendous investment. They did a first class. But, yeah, we just want to, again, remove any imaginary, you know, walls between mm-hmm. us, mm-hmm. you know, and bridge the gap, so to speak. And that's fact is that's one of the programs that's in the police department under Commander Graves is called Bridge the Gap. But we just want to make it inviting and encourage them. And that's why most of these Coffee with the Cops are done in small communities. They only do one or two a year. We're committed to doing two a month, so we can
that's great.
You know, cover the territory. You know, again, we do some in the morning, some in the afternoon when I was at the library. You know, I asked the librarian there in Stanton Road, what's the best time? Well, in the afternoon. So we were there 2 to 4, and we had lemonade there too.
But, cool.
But anyhow, so we're making great progress. We had, took a 2-year hiatus like most things, but we're getting back in the role of things.
John, thank you for visiting us this morning and bringing us some goodies, and also obviously for what's happening tomorrow.
Yes, thank you. And everybody stay safe, and remember the police officers are your friends.
No doubt about that.
John Weishman, he's a community research officer with the Crime Prevention Unit here in Mobile.
Yeah.
And awfully nice fellow. A lot of you remember him from the restaurant business years ago, for sure. He's got quite a history in this city.
Yeah.
What's up, man?
I'm disappointed in myself. It took me about 10 seconds to grab a donut once John came in here with the dozen donuts from Dunkin' Donuts. Might have been record time for me.
He kind of pointed it out, too. It's 846 FM Talk 106.5. Dan and Dalton, your phone call's on the way. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It's Mobile Mornings. I think it's confirmed now our game of the week here, UTV 44, is going to be... Yeah, this is the top of the pile here in Region 1, 7A. It's Theodore is going to host Fairhope.
Oh, wow.
So they're both having good years. I think Theodore is undefeated right now. Just wanted to bring up this. So I was at the, we did the McGill-Murphy game at Ladd People Stadium a couple of weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd wasn't so massive. It really was not that big a crowd. And yet it took me forever to get out of the parking lot. We even waited 15 minutes. We had to continue to do TV because we had to kind of stretch it, as they say in the business. We got to stretch for 15 minutes. Okay, so we did. I thought at that point it would be just blowing and going. I could be. It might have had something to do with the painting of the cannon. Maybe that was part of the problem. But it took forever to get out of that parking lot.
Do you think that is?
So I reached out to the officials. They were having the Gulf Coast Challenge the next day, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, you know, anyhow, as it turns out, for whatever reason, now at Ladd People Stadium, it's up to the home team's volunteers. A lot of that is on them. Parking, getting out of the parking lot, the concessions, and all this kind of stuff.
Really? Kind of like, yes. You know, your average, whatever school would have their own home stadium.
Exactly.
And you get people out there to direct traffic and concessions.
And that changed here recently. It might have been a COVID change. I'm not exactly sure, but that's the way it is now.
So there were employees with Ladd that used to do this.
Right. Right. Okay. So now where I'm getting at is they're planning on building 5 stadiums, and I think I've got that right, for public high schools in the city of Mobile.
Mm-hmm.
5 new stadiums. Now, you say stadium, you know, a high school field with
right.
bleachers. Here's going to be the problem. Those stadiums are going to need to be run. They're going to need to be staffed. There's going to have to be people there, not just game night,
mm-hmm.
after the game, cleaning up. You have it.
Right.
And I'm not so sure that these schools are going to be able to wrangle up a bunch of volunteers. I know when McGill opened their stadium where they no longer had to play at Ladd, mm-hmm. they were like, let's just go on our own. Okay, good idea. You know what happened? There were dozens of people every Friday night, never saw a McGill game.
Yeah,
they were busy
working.
The stadium drew big crowds. McGill was a good football team. Okay, but what you have to do now is accommodate these
right.
people.
Right, and that always creates some hurt feelings, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Where you have, you know, some parents who show up every game and they're grilling burgers and dogs mm-hmm. and working in the concession stand, and then I'm sure you have the parents that are just like, no, I'm gonna
watch
sit
my
in the stands
play.
And watch the game, when it's kind of, you know, if it's a team effort there, you'd think that the right thing to do would be everyone kind of switching off. But then, like you said, what if you have a school where nobody wants to volunteer?
And organizationally, you have to manage all of that. And, I don't know. I'm not saying McGill wasn't ready for that, but I'm sure they learned along the way, like, wow, it's not so easy running a stadium.
Right.
So if you're going to have 5 different stadiums around this city at schools like LaFleur and Williamson, I guess Williamson might get their own, even though they're right next to Ladd People Stadium, and that may say something about the future of Ladd People Stadium. All I'm saying is Friday nights for those football games, just take the evening itself, that night.
Mm-hmm.
You need to have people in the ticket office. You need to have people. And another thing about volunteers with the parking, you need to, and coming and going, you need to have people who know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And are able to get you in and out.
Mm-hmm. No double parking for sure.
I had a situation earlier this year, that it was another complete headache in the parking lot. And it went, and I was like, what's going on? I won't even say the school, because they're hopefully they're going to get it together. But it was like, no, once you get to the street, it's police directing.
Right.
Getting out of the parking lot, that's all on volunteers with mm-hmm. the school, who evidently had no volunteers there that night.
Yeah.
It was complete gridlock.
So, I think my school used to, like, I don't know if it was $10 or $20, but they would slide whoever decided to get parking lot duty. And it was usually teenagers
sure.
in high school.
Okay.
They'd slide them 20 for the night to get people in and get them out. I don't know if they did a good job or not.
Well, and you wasn't that big a school. It was a little prep
right,
school, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
So we're talking about schools that have got
huge difference.
A big enrollment, and maybe some of them have got viable football programs, maybe others don't.
Mm-hmm.
What is that volunteer base going to look like on just take the night alone. We have got a game tonight, so-and-so against our team. But let's make sure we got enough people here to make it all work. Will they? That's my question.
Great question. One of the texters here who always loves giving me grief about the Tennessee Vols said, clean up, no problem. Detention students on Monday now have a job. I remember, now I wasn't in detention very often in high school, but the football coach was also a driver's ed teacher. Mm-hmm. And on Mondays, he would get the entire class, driver's ed class, and we'd drive over to the football stadium, and that's exactly what we would do. We would pick up all the trash from the prior Friday night. Speaking of which, when will my alma mater make it to that UTV 44 game of the week? When are we going to get a Clark Prep game up there?
Yeah, so doing it now, look, they haven't been on yet, but we've only been doing this thing 21 years. So I'm saying there's a chance.
There's a chance.
I'm saying there's no chance. We've got to still take care of some of the smaller, like, I guess we've gotten down as low in terms of classification. I think we've done 3A. We did a game over at Bayside Academy. Mm. And again, that's a school, they can have their own stadium.
Yeah.
They've got volunteers. They've got a built-in workforce. You know what I mean? Beautiful stadium right in the middle of the neighborhood, right on the campus. You should check that box and go to a game at Bayside Academy.
Is it true that at St. Michael Catholic now, the Rivers children work the concession stand, the grill, and clean up after the games? All the Rivers children.
And make up the kickoff return team.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I know he's got a bunch of kids. Are any of those kids high school age? I would think so.
I think some of the girls, you know, lots of girls in that family. Okay. I was thinking they've probably got a volleyball team ready to dominate here in the next few years.
If you've got Philip Rivers' daughters, you probably have got some pretty good volleyball players in there.
I'd say so, no doubt. But that's interesting. You know, not a lot of people talking about it. We discussed it a few months ago about this plan to build these new stadiums.
And remember, the plan seemed to come out of nowhere. It was like, what?
Yeah.
And what, you know, how is it politically motivated when it comes to the future of Ladd Peebles Stadium, which, you know, that's a conversation for another time. All I'm saying is if you're going to get a stadium, it's not just this piece of granite that sits there and doesn't have to be maintained.
Right.
It most certainly does. And whatever form it is, if it's wooden bleachers or if it's I guess most aluminum bleachers, you know. But you got to have tickets. You have to have parking. You have to have volunteers for the – and I just think for some schools, I think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see that problem, and we're going to notice that problem, and we're going to say, why didn't we think about this before we built all these stadiums?
You'd know better than most. You're out there every Friday night at a new game, so that's for sure. Coming up, Jeff Borsho, Attorney General Steve Marshall in the first hour. Dan Gaynor coming on hour two. Former Congressman Parker Griffin in hour three. And former State Senator Dick Brubaker. Another great show on the way.
Jeff Poore next, FM Talk 106.5.